Okay, folks, we're back. We're back online. Oh, it's going to be so much fun. All right. All right. So we were talking about perturbation theory last time. Excuse me. I just want to quickly review what we did and then ask if you have any questions about it before we get going again. So the idea is that there's some interesting problem that we can't solve. So this is time-independent Schrodinger equation problems. So there's eigenfunctions, eigenvalues we can't solve for exactly because it's just too hard. It could be done numerically, perhaps. But the idea is that it's similar to some other problem that's very, well, that can be solved exactly. And so that has a Hamiltonian H0 with eigenfunctions psi n0, en0. And so if we can express the new Hamiltonian in terms of the old one plus some perturbing piece, lambda h prime, then we can come up with an approximation scheme to solve the full problem by doing a series expansion for the unknown eigenfunction, unknown eigenvalue in terms of the zeroth order known eigenfunction, eigenvalue, plus first, second, third, fourth, et cetera, higher order powers of lambda multiplying coefficients, which have to be solved for. So that's the basic idea. And if lambda is much less than 1, then that series will converge quickly. And very often in practice, you only need a few terms before you're done, more or less. All right, so if we make that substitution back to the original Schrodinger problem, gather like powers of lambda so it acts as a bookkeeping parameter, as I said, then we get these equations. The first one is the original unperturbed problem, which is already solved. The second one is interesting because now this has new information. It's got the first order correction to the wave function and the first order correction to the eigenenergy. We solve for that. Today we'll also look at the second order equation, which I wrote to here for the first time. So the way we solve it is by making a supposition that a well-behaved wave function, which is our first order correction wave function, can be expressed as a linear combination of all the eigenfunctions of any observable operator in the system. In this case, the observable operator is the Hamiltonian, the unperturbed problem. We don't know the ANL expansion coefficients. But putting that in, we can then solve for these two unknown quantities. So we find the first order correction for energy is just the expectation value of the perturbing Hamiltonian in the unperturbed basis. It's a beautiful result that's used throughout physics every day in, day out. It's a hugely important result from perturbation theory. And we can express the first order correction to the wave function in terms of, again, a sum over all the unperturbed eigenfunctions with this weighting coefficient involving what we call a matrix element of the perturbing Hamiltonian between two different unperturbed eigenfunctions, L and N, where L is not equal to N, divided by the so-called energy denominator. Again, a famous result in physics. So that energy denominator is going to be small when the two energies or the two eigenstates are close together in the energy eigenvalue ladder. And so this tends to mix in new states, which are typically the neighboring eigenstates, neighboring in energy, as part of the first order correction, okay? So perturbations tend to mix eigenfunctions together. That's sort of an important qualitative thing you should understand. Okay, I made lambda equal to 1. That reduces to forcing these conditions for smallness, that is first order correction to energy is much less than the zeroth order correction, and a similar statement there in terms of the difference between energy eigenvalues. Okay, any questions so far? Yeah. Oh, go ahead. You're first. Yeah. Yeah, well, right. It kind of justifies this expansion to say that this is something that's going to converge fairly quickly. So it gives it some mathematical oomph. But what it really does also is it helps us to sort out the big stuff from the next bigger stuff from the next bigger stuff and so on. Right? So right. Well, all I'm going to do is say that lambda's 1. It was just a crutch. It was a crutch that I needed temporarily way back here. Where is it? It was a crutch that I needed temporarily to try to express the fact that this was a small perturbation. But I'm just going to make lambda equal to 1 and then replace that with these conditions that I wrote down here, which is that the expectation values of h prime are small compared to the expectation values of h0, essentially. This stuff down here at the bottom. Okay? So So all I did was use Lambda as a crutch temporarily to get me to these results, and then I can just do away with it. It's just a mathematical construction. Okay, another question here? Oh, sorry, you had the next question. Sorry? Yeah. Yeah, they'll put a parenthesis around them. Yeah, it's meant to be the same thing. So these are not powers of anything. Similarly with the E's. Right, zeroth is the unperturbed, uncorrected. First is the first order correction. Two is the second order correction. So we expect anything with a super two to be generally smaller than things with super ones, which in turn are smaller than things with super zeros. Okay, yes. Well, we're not dropping it. This term, you mean the H0 psi n2 there? We're just saying that comes in on order lambda squared. That came in down on the quadratic part of the expansion. Right, so this will be the next order correction to the wave function, which will be in terms of variations of higher order, zeroth and oneth, the first order stuff. Yeah, go ahead. Good.
With setting lambda equal to one really means the smallness of lambda has been absorbed into the H.
Smallness of H prime or H1, yeah. Exactly, right. It's just, I'm just shifting it over to that, exactly. Good, all right, good questions. Anything else? I think it's best if we do some examples. So we'll do two examples today. We'll finish this one that I started last time. I did it a little bit too fast. And then we'll do another one directly related to the hydrogen atom. Okay? So let's go back and just quickly review this relatively simple thing. All right. So we're. So I want to consider this unperturbed. Sorry. What I'm trying to do is solve this problem, which is the infinite square well with a brick in the bottom of it. So it's a one-dimensional problem. So here's the x coordinate. I'm using the setup that you've seen before for the infinite square well problem, where it's just an infinite square well between x equals 0 and x equals a. So you're quite familiar with this stuff. So you'll see a reappearance of all that stuff from 401 now, right? Because you learned all those one-dimensional, relatively straightforward problems in 401. They're now going to make a reappearance, the harmonic oscillator, the infinite square well, the finite square well, the delta function perturbations, the delta function wells, and so on. They're all going to reappear now because we're going to look at variations on those themes. We're going to look at things that can't be solved exactly. So this is a case where we add a little step in the bottom of the well of height delta, and I took it to be a symmetric position, sort of in the middle one-third of the bottom of the well. So just a little step upward. So that's my unperturbed problem. On the left, this is my perturbed problem, which is H0 plus lambda H1. But you know what? I'm just going to drop the lambda. We don't need that crutch anymore. But I've got a small perturbation H prime. Okay? So we went through all this before. We know the unperturbed Hamiltonian. It's just the kinetic energy of the particle of mass m living in this box, plus this potential V of x, which is 0 inside the well and infinite outside. So you know all that stuff. We already know the unperturbed eigenfunctions and eigenvalues, so I won't repeat all that stuff, but that's just straight out of 401. N squared pi squared h bar squared over 2ma squared, and then these normalized eigenfunctions, root 2 over a sine m pi x over a, inside the well, and of course 0 outside the well. There's nothing going on outside the well. The perturbing Hamiltonian is the stuff that's new, right? It's everything that's not included in the unperturbed Hamiltonian. All right, where V of x is the thing that I've written on the website there. Okay. So what's new about this Hamiltonian is the fact that there's a bump here. So this perturbing Hamiltonian has the form that it's equal to delta when x is less than 2a by 3, greater than a by 3, and it's 0 everywhere else. So 0 for x less than a over 3 and also for x greater than 2a over 3. Okay, so that's the nature of the perturbation. It's limited in space, and it's going to be small. And when we can find out later what small means in this context. Okay, so any questions about that? So you're going to be, when you're using perturbation theory, you have to clearly specify what is h0, what are the psi n zeros, the en zeros. That's all known stuff. You look it up in a book somewhere. Then you have to very clearly write down what h prime is. What is the new feature? What is the perturbation that's coming out? Okay. Once you've got that, so there's my h prime of x. I can then go and calculate the first order corrections to now I'm going to consider just the ground state. Okay, so I'm going to focus on only one possible state of the system, which is n equal 1, which is the ground state, which has a value E10. So the subscript, remember, in general is a list of quantum numbers. It could be N, L, and M for the hydrogen atom, which it will be in a few minutes when we do that. But for this case, that list of quantum numbers is just a single quantum number, N, which unfortunately has the same name. And I'm going to look at the ground state, which is N equal 1, which has an eigenenergy of pi squared h bar squared over 2ma squared. Okay, and the ground state eigenfunction, as you probably remember, looks like that. It's just a half wave. So now I'm plotting psi of x as well as v of x. So hopefully you've gotten accustomed to the fact that physicists tend to put a lot of things on the same plot. So the v of x is this well, but then often you'll see things like wave functions plotted on top of that, and it's very confusing. So just try to remember that it's a double y plot, as they say in that business. So, all right. So anyway, there's the ground state energy and eigenfunction. These are the first order corrections. Just plug it in and carry out the integrals. So you integrate minus infinity to infinity of the unperturbed ground state eigenfunction starred. It's a real number. It's a real function. It's okay. Times h prime times the ground state wave function psi 1. So it's the expectation value of the perturbing Hamiltonian in the unperturbed basis. Well, integral minus infinity to infinity gets cut down a lot because h prime is 0 almost everywhere except between a by 3 and 2a by 3. Okay, so that's where you get this reduction. There's your psi 1 0 star. There's your psi 1 0. There's your perturbing Hamiltonian. It's just that little delta thing that's left over. Anyway, you can carry out the integral. You get that exact result, which is about 0.61 times delta. Okay, so that's the change in energy to first order due to this perturbation. And as you can see, it's a positive change if delta is positive. If delta was negative, it was a little well at the bottom of the infinite square well, then it would bring down the energy a little bit by 0.61 delta. Okay. And we expect that this change, this perturbation, when compared to the unperturbed eigen energy, is going to be small. Okay, so that's one of the conditions for lambda being much less than 1 is now replaced with 0.61 delta should be much less than pi squared h bar squared over 2ma squared. Okay, so that's the smallness condition now coming back in. We would expect that if we were to go to second order, which we're going to do in a minute, then there'll be another term here, of course, which will be still smaller than 0.61 delta. Okay, and then subsequent terms will get smaller still. And then this converges very quickly. Any questions about that? Go ahead.
Is that delta actually in any way related to Dirac delta? Or
no, just looks the same. But in your homework problem, you do this with the Dirac delta function instead of this rectangular bump. Yeah, just a coincidence. Okay. All right, to first order in the eigenfunction, we now have this calculation to do, which is actually an infinite sum. Ouch. So the first order correction of the eigenfunction is an infinite sum over all the eigenfunctions of the unperturbed problem. So just to go back, where the heck is it? It's way back here. Yeah, so there it is. We're using equation 9, which you can see is a sum over all L not equal to N, so which in our case will be L going from 2 to infinity because we're looking at N equal 1. And so we're going to have to evaluate that infinite sum in principle of the perturbing Hamiltonian now matrix element, right, between unperturbed ground state, N equal 1, and any other state L, divided by the energy difference between those two states. So clearly, what's going to dominate this sum is the thing that has the smallest denominator, all right, assuming that the numerator doesn't change very much. So the thing that has the smallest denominator is L equals what? 2. Okay? L can't be 1. The next closest is 2. That would give us the smallest denominator. It's the smallest energy difference between the unperturbed eigenenergies. Okay, so the biggest contribution to this sum is likely to be L equals 2. And so, in fact, that's where I'm going to stop. I'm just going to look at that term of this infinite series and call that a pretty good approximation. One can always make it better. Okay, so the bottom line is that we should first look at L equals 2. In that case, as it turns out, the integral is 0 because of symmetry. Because what we're doing is looking at the overlap between that state and this state. And I'm using a perturbation which is symmetric about the middle. And you can see the product of these two is an odd function about the middle of the well. And so when I integrate the product, I'm going to get 0. Okay? So the first non-zero term I get in the sum actually is L equals 3. And here's the coefficient, A13. It's this matrix element, as we say, between state 3 and state 1 through the perturbing Hamiltonian. So the perturbation actually links together different states of the system. It's a very important concept, which we're going to come back to when we do time-dependent perturbation theory. Time-dependent perturbation theory will cause transitions from one state to another. And those transitions will come about because of terms like this. And so the perturbation links different states of the system. That's what makes atoms emit light, as it turns out. Okay, we'll see that later. Anyway, there you go. There's that ratio. The integral now is non-zero, and we get a number which is kind of ugly, but there it is. It's proportional to delta. It's ma squared over 4 pi squared h bar squared. So that ratio is dimensionless times the number 3 root 3 over 4 pi. Okay. So the first approximation, actually to part of first approximation, the new wave function for the ground state is the original ground state wave function, which is the zeroth order term, plus this new term where we've just calculated the coefficient, this thing, A13, times the third excited state, or the second excited state, depending on how you call it, of the infinite square well unperturbed problem. Got it? So I'm just adding A13 times psi 30. This A12 term is 0. Okay? And then that could be continued forever. Any questions about that? So these are good calculations to do. You're going to do them actually as part of your homework.
In general, if you have some sort of symmetry in your problem, mm-hmm. and the perturbing Hamiltonian gives the same symmetry, mm-hmm. you never have to worry about even
the right. If there's a lot of symmetry, as there is in this problem, then there will be certain kinds of states that are just excluded from the new eigenfunctions because of all the symmetry of the problem. That's right. In general, it's not true, right? So if I were to move this off a little bit to the left or the right, then I would be mixing in all these other states as well. So this is still a fairly symmetric problem. Symmetry is often very helpful for solving problems. Recognizing symmetries and exploiting them often is very, 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 very good at cutting down the time it takes to do calculations. Okay, here's the result. We calculated the change in energy. Here's my sketch of what the new eigenfunction looks like. The original eigenfunction was this red curve, which is just sine pi x over a. So this is x going from 0 to 1 in units of a. The perturbing potential was just this little brick at the bottom. And now you can see to first order, what you do is you take sine pi x over a, and you basically add sine 3 pi x over a with some little coefficient in front. And the sum of those two things now looks like this blue curve. So the thing to look at is to see that the probability amplitude has actually dropped in the region of the step, and it's enhanced in the wings or on the sides of the step, which is exactly what you'd expect classically. A particle that was rattling around in the bottom of this thing would probably spend less time over this thing and a little bit more time out here in the wings. Okay? And you can see that coming out already in the first order corrected, in the part of the first order corrected eigenfunction. These higher order terms are going to be of the form sine of what? 5 pi x over a, 7 pi x over a, and so on, And what that's going to do is it's going to start adding little wiggles, but it's really not going to change the basic structure of this eigenfunction. Okay. Quick question. Is this eigenfunction normalized? Yes, no? Well, it was normalized before I added this darn thing, right? So that part is normalized. We know that's normalized. But when I add that, it's no longer normalized. So when I'm done, which means when I've decided, okay, I've got enough terms and I've reproduced enough wiggles in this wave function, I have to stop and I have to normalize the thing again in order to use it to do calculations like expectation values and so on. Okay? You've got to go back and normalize the thing properly, you bet. Okay, any other questions about that infinite square wall problem? You have a similar problem for homework due Friday. Yes. Yeah, so the brick will have different effects on different eigenstates. We only, at this point, have looked at the effects on the ground state.
Right.
It probably has the biggest effect on the ground state because that's the one that's closest to the bottom of the well in some sense. As you get to higher and higher energy states, the particle is just rattling back and forth really fast. It doesn't really care about the details at the bottom of the well. So this is probably the biggest perturbation of all. Any other questions? All right, let's go on to second order perturbation theory. I'm not going to do all the details. We've already shown you the principles of it. So now I'm just going to focus on this lambda 2, this lambda squared thing that we had before. Just to go back and let's just write that down. So it says that the unperturbing Hamiltonian acting on the second order correction to the wave function, psi n 2, plus h prime psi n 1. So the perturbing Hamiltonian acting on psi n1 is equal to en0 psi n2 plus, I guess it's en1 psi n1, that's pretty clear, plus, I guess, en0 psi n2. Nope, sorry, en2 psi n0. There we go. All right. Well, what are we looking for here? We already know h0. We already know psi n0. That's the original unperturbed problem. We now know psi n1 and en1, just from the first order calculation. So what's unknown now is psi n2 and en2. Okay, so two unknown quantities. We're going to do the same thing we did before, which is we're going to do that series expansion. We're going to take some reasonable wave function psi n2 and expand it as an infinite sum of terms of the unperturbed eigenfunction, or eigenfunctions psi n0. All right, so let me just get my notation right here. So we're going to write it as psi n2 is the sum on L, and I'm going to leave that unspecified for now, times the unperturbed eigenfunction psi l0 with some new unknown coefficients, which we're going to call b sub nl. Try to make it look like a B and not a 6. Okay, so that's the same postulate of quantum mechanics we've used before. At the same time, we're going to go back and use that same expansion we had for the first order term, which is the sum on k not equal to n for psi n1 of a n k psi k0. And now we know these a n k's. We know them from the first order perturbation expansion. Okay, so I'm just going to expand both of my eigenfunctions, psi n1 and psi n2, as infinite sums over unperturbed eigenfunctions, psi n0s and psi l0s or whatever. Okay? Anyway, I'm not going to go through the details. It's the same trick we did before. So you're just going to substitute these infinite series things into that equation. We're going to project out the jth function or vector in Hilbert space, and we're going to get an equation, an algebraic equation. And I'm just going to skip down to that without going through all these details. What we're going to get is a bnj, which will come out of that left term, times Ej0 plus a sum on k not equal to n of Ank, which we actually know, times now a new overlap, which is psi j0 star on the perturbing Hamiltonian. This is from the second term, times psi k0 d3x. So we're going to get a new matrix element term from that. That's a B. I'm trying really hard to make it look like a 6. Yeah, sorry. Okay. So then from this next term, the psi n2 term, we're going to get En0, and this is just going to be Bnj. I'm going to skip a term which isn't important for what I'm about to do, and then just write down this last term, which is En2 delta Jn. Okay, there's another term that I haven't written down there, which is only relevant if j is not equal to n. Okay? So anyway, this is the same sort of thing we did last time, just projecting out the jth term, right? So I multiply on the left by psi j0 star, integrate over all space, and I get a lot of delta functions, Kronecker deltas that come out of that. All right, so if I take the case n is equal to j, which you may recall was how we got the energy correction, I will now also get the energy correction from this expression. I'm going to make a long story short. It turns out to be a fairly nice result. So the second order correction to the eigenenergy, which is all I'm going to do today, is the sum over some index k not equal to n. So some people are asking, what are these indices? What do they mean? They're just sums over all the eigenfunctions of the unperturbed Hamiltonian. And remember, n and k and l and j are all lists of quantum numbers in general. They're not just single numbers. Okay, so I'm throwing around a lot of stuff here when I'm writing these subscripts. They represent a whole long list of eigenvalues, and I'm summing over every possible value that they can have. Keep that in mind. All right, so what I get is a very nice thing, which is just the absolute square of the matrix element, psi k0 star, perturbing Hamiltonian h prime, psi n0 d3x. So it's that integral mag squared divided by the energy eigenvalue difference, en0 minus ek0. And I hope you can see that. Right, so that's just some algebra. So it says that if I want to do a second order energy correction, I have to do a lot of work. I have to sum over all the eigenvalues, k, other than n, which is the one I'm looking for. So again, n could be, say, the ground state of the system. This would be the sum over all other states of the system of the what we call the matrix element, linking the ground state, say, psi n0, to some excited state, psi k0, through the perturbing Hamiltonian. This is called a matrix element. In many cases, it's zero. We saw an example here today. We take that integral. It's a complex number. We take the absolute square, and we divide by this energy eigenvalue difference. But you're not done. You have to do that over every possible state of the system. That's a lot of work. That can be done, though. So you have a homework problem due Friday where you're going to carry out that sum. And it's an infinite sum, and you're going to carry it out. And I'll give you a clue at the beginning of the second half of the talk today. I'll give you a clue about how to solve that infinite sum. And then you'll get a nice closed form answer for this. Go ahead.
Does the k not equal to n account for degenerate states as well?
Ah, good question. So what we're doing right now is called non-degenerate, just to give it a nice long name, non-degenerate time-independent perturbation theory. Okay. Non-degenerate means that no two of the eigenvalues have the same numerical result. Or in other words, there are no two distinct lists of quantum numbers that have the same exact eigenenergy. That's what we mean by non-degenerate. That's actually pretty rare. It's very rarely like that. You know, in the hydrogen atom, there's a huge amount of degeneracy, at least the hydrogen atom, the unperturbed hydrogen atom problem that we've done so far. This is kind of an aside, but it's an interesting one. So the H atom, in the sense of the unperturbed H atom that we've studied so far, which we're quickly going to demolish and do other things with, that has a degeneracy, and you can prove this, which is equal to n squared. Okay? So in other words, the first, and this n now, is the principal quantum number. So that's the one that goes from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? So it's not a list. It's just a single integer. So the ground state of hydrogen is non-degenerate. It's n equal 1. There's only one state that has that energy. When you go to the second excited state, n equals 2, there's now four states, four degenerate states at that energy. So it's actually L equals 0, which has one state, and L equals 1, which has three states. So altogether, there's four there. If you go to n equals 3, there's a degeneracy of 9. If you go to n equals 4, there's a degeneracy of 16. It's a huge amount of degeneracy in the hydrogen atom. So we have to be very careful in applying this theory to the hydrogen atom. Basically, it only works well for the ground state. Okay? Quick question. Yeah, it's just a lot more laborious to calculate it. And as you could see in this example that I did with the infinite square well, you can actually do a lot of damage. You can learn a lot of stuff by just carrying out the first order correction and just keep adding terms, right? There's an infinite series to first order. And so you can learn a lot by just expanding that first order correction to the eigenfunction. One reason why people care about this term is that very often, if there is enough symmetry in the problem, En1 is equal to 0. So in other words, the first order, there is no energy change due to a perturbation, but only in second order do you actually see any change. So that's why this is such a popular calculation to do. Whereas very often, it's the case that the first order, there's already a significant change to the wave function. What do you mean a whole series of things that could be zero? You mean? You mean these things? Oh. Yeah, if there's enough symmetry in the problem and this perturbing Hamiltonian, yeah, you could get a lot of zero terms here. Yeah, that's true. Right, so let's get back to the first question, which was degeneracy. So degeneracy, yeah. So why do I have to be non-degenerate? It's because I don't want to have any zeros in this denominator. That's why. Okay, so it's important. Okay, and we're also doing time-independent perturbation theory, which means that we're just solving the time-independent Schrodinger equation. Later, we're going to go back and do time-dependent perturbation theory, which is really cool, where all this stuff takes on an interesting life of its own. We can do degenerate time-independent perturbation theory, and that's given to you for homework as one of the extra credit problems today for Friday. Okay, which is done in the context of the Stark effect, which is when you turn on a very strong electric field on a hydrogen atom, you can cause a splitting of these states, these degenerate states, particularly the one that's in the problem is n equals 2, where you have four degenerate states. You can split that degeneracy by applying an electric field to the atom, and then you can do what we call degenerate perturbation theory, which is discussed in the book, but I don't have time to do it here on the board. Okay. All right. Any other questions? Quickly. Okay, I want to do one more thing today. And I want to do another example of time-independent, non-degenerate perturbation theory. And this is a little bit more close to home. It's going to use the hydrogen atom. So we're going to look at the relativistic correction. To the hydrogen atom. All right, so we're going to look at the fact that we've been treating the electron and proton motion as classical Galilean-type motion. We're going to look at now the relativistic correction to that. For the hydrogen atom, we'll get a piece that will turn out to be a perturbation. We'll treat it as a perturbation. We'll get a first-order correction to the eigenenergy of the hydrogen atoms, which is cool. So, in fact, that will help to break some of the degeneracy that we have in the unperturbed hydrogen atom problem. All right. Well, the Schrodinger equation the Hamiltonian is basically a statement of the total energy of the electron-proton system. Consists of a kinetic energy, a potential energy, and a total energy. The kinetic energy we've approximated as just being p squared over 2m, just the classical non-relativistic energy. In reality, what is the kinetic energy of a relativistic particle? Anybody on top of their special relativity at the moment? Just a free particle moving through space, some finite mass, some finite momentum. Does this look familiar? You like that? So p squared c squared plus m squared c to the fourth square root minus the rest energy of the particle, right? So this is the total energy. That's the rest energy of the particle. So I'm ignoring the potential for the moment, and so that's just going to be the kinetic energy of the particle if it's a free particle. Okay? And then to that, of course, I'm going to add the potential, V of r. I'm going to get the total energy then. So that would be my version of the Schrodinger equation that includes the relativistic properties of this electron, which actually is scooting around pretty darn fast inside the hydrogen atom. So it's actually not a negligible correction, as you'll see. So there's another version of this equation for the electron, which is called the Dirac equation, which is actually a really nice thing where you can solve it exactly as well. It was done later after this Schrodinger wrote down the equation for the hydrogen atom. But there's a Dirac equation which is based on the same form, which is really cool because it predicted, back in 1932 or something, it predicted the existence of antiparticles for the very first time. Cool. And it also predicted, or it was at least consistent with the idea of spin. Spin a half, of all things. All right. So anyway, just to give you a little historical connection, this kind of a treatment is actually quite interesting because it led to some really important insights. And the prediction of antimatter, I mean, was just an amazing result, right? I mean, just to come up with that from theory, purely theory, is amazing. Anyway, what we're going to do is just treat this as a perturbation to our existing treatment of the hydrogen atom. So you know the routine. We've got some unperturbed problem. And now that's the unperturbed problem. So N now really means our old friends N, L, and M, the three quantum numbers for the hydrogen atom. I'm going to leave spin out for the moment. It's not necessary. So N now, in this notation, represents that list of quantum numbers, which are the principal quantum number, the angular momentum quantum number, and the magnetic quantum number. Okay, we're going to go back and look at that problem. So we're just going to see what happens when we consider this small perturbation to the kinetic energy. All right. So let me just look at this piece. I could pull out the mc squared, and I can get a 1 plus a p squared c squared. See if I can do this right without making any terrible mistakes. So there's a p squared c squared over an m squared c to the fourth square root minus mc squared. So I'm just looking at the kinetic energy part now. You buy that? I just pulled out the mc squared, the rest energy of the electron. So this m is the electron rest energy. Now I'm going to make the assumption, of course, that p squared c squared over the square of the rest energy is going to be a small quantity. Okay? So I'm going to define a quantity I'll call x, which is the ratio of this momentum term to the kinetic energy term. And I'm going to assume that in the hydrogen atom, which is a good approximation, that that's a small number. This is the beginning of my smallness approximation. So the electron's moving fast, but it's not approaching the speed of light in its motion. So I now have an equation here, which I want you to look at. It's something of the form 1 plus x to the square root, where x is much less than 1. That should trigger a group of neurons somewhere in the upper right part of your brain to think about the what? The binomial expansion. Very good. OK, so what do I get? 1 plus, well, let's make it 1 plus x to the power n, for example, right? So it's, what is it, nx plus n into n minus 1 over 2 factorial x squared plus n into n minus 1 into n minus 2 over 3 factorial x cubed plus dot, 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 right? So the binomial expansion for a quantity, which this will converge, of course, whenever x is less than 1. Good. We'll apply it here. What it says is that we've got the rest energy times 1 plus, so x is this ratio here, nx, so it's a half of this stuff, p squared, c squared over m squared, c to the fourth, plus a half times minus a half over 2 factorial. What's that? Minus, help me. We're on this second, this term right here. So it's a half times a half minus 1, which is minus a quarter, divided by 2, which is minus an eighth, I think, right? Minus 1/8 of x squared, which is going to be this lovely thing, p4 c4 over m4 c to the eighth, okay? Plus dot, 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 and then it's going to be subtracting off mc squared, which is, remember, the rest energy of the particle. You with me on this? Okay, so you see that the one term and the mc squared terms cancel each other. That's falling out. What I'm left with then, if I terminate the series, is this multiplying mc squared. So what I get is 1/2 of p squared over 2m, or let's just call it p squared over 2m, right, from that first term. And I've got minus 1/8. I have to reduce all this stuff. I've got p to the fourth over, holy mackerel, m cubed c to the what? So I've got 6 upstairs. I've got 8 downstairs. It looks like it's squared. Do you agree with that? Okay, and then plus higher order terms. Yeah, good. So if I go back to the Schrodinger equation, I now have something that looks like this. I've got p squared over 2m, which of course is going to be converted into an operator that you're familiar with. But now I have to subtract a new operator to this next order of approximation, p to the fourth over m cubed c squared. I'm going to leave out the higher order terms because I think that this number x is much less than 1 in general. That I'm going to add to the potential, multiplying my wave function, which is my new wave function, times my new eigenenergy, times my new wave function. Okay? So the V of r will, of course, be the classical Coulomb attraction between the electron and the proton. And there you go. Okay? So you see here, on the left, you see what I've got is my H0 plus my H prime. And my H prime obviously is this perturbing piece, which is minus 1/8 of P4 over M cubed C squared. So I can treat this first order correction due to the relativistic motion of the electron as a perturbation on the original unperturbed hydrogen atom problem. Okay, so just that's the important concept to see at this point. I can now treat that thing as a first order, well, as a perturbation. Let's rewrite this so it looks better. Okay, any questions about that? All right, well, we know what to do. You know the drill. You just plug in and calculate, right? You just turn the crank at this point to get the first order correction to the eigenenergy, which I'm writing in this old form of n, where n represents a list of quantum numbers, which by coincidence, actually, only depends on the principal quantum number. So that's an accidental degeneracy in some sense. This will be now the, all right, let's be more specific. It's e sub nlm, first order correction, will be the overlap of, well, the expectation value, nlm 0 star, perturbing Hamiltonian, psi nlm, and this will be d3x. All right, so I'm just doing the shorthand. I don't want to write out all the spherical stuff. Okay, so the first order correction to the energy of the state nlm, labeled by nlm, will be the expectation value of the unperturbed perturbing Hamiltonian in the unperturbed eigenstates. It's exactly what we've been writing before. So let's do that quickly. It's kind of fun. So what I'm doing is taking an expectation value of the perturbing Hamiltonian. So really what this is asking me to do is find the expectation value of minus 1/8 p to the fourth over m cubed c squared in some state, in some eigenstate of the hydrogen atom, the unperturbed hydrogen atom. That's all it's asking me to do. And that will give me an answer in electron volts or whatever that will tell me how the energy has shifted as a result of this relativistic correction. Looks like the shift is going to be down, which is kind of interesting. So the hydrogen atom actually will have slightly larger binding energy than what we estimated before. Anyway, I'll make a long story short. This is kind of a cute little calculation you can do. What we're really looking for here is the expectation value of p to the fourth in the unperturbed basis. So all these other numbers, 8, m cubed, c squared, are just numbers. They just move out of the expectation values. But p, I can write as 2m into the total energy minus the potential energy. It's kind of a little bit of a trick. Actually, I can write p squared in that form. So I can write p to the fourth as 4m squared into e minus v of r quantity squared, which is 4m squared into e squared minus 2e v of r minus v squared of r. Whoops. So I'm doing it. So I'm just rewriting the momentum squared in terms of things that we know. Well, things that we know, energy and potential. We're going to consider the hydrogen atom. And by the way, everything I've done up to this point has been very general. I haven't considered any particular potential, but I will consider a particular potential now. Okay, so this correction, by the way, will apply to lots of other problems as well up to this point. And so now what I need to do is calculate expectation value of p to the fourth, which is going to be 4m squared. And what I'm going to get then is my en0 squared minus 2en0 expectation of v of r minus the expectation value of v squared of r. Okay, sounds good. Let's make that a plus. Thank you. Very good. Right. Okay, long story short, these expectation values of the potential can actually be done. Mathematical physicists back in the 1920s, of course, had great fun doing these calculations. This can be done for an arbitrary hydrogen atom state, NLM. All right, it's a cool calculation. If you look back in some really old mathematical physics texts, you can find these things done. So it's minus e squared over 4 pi epsilon 0. That's just the constant part of the potential. And then, of course, it's just the expectation value of 1 over r for a hydrogen atom in the state NLM. For homework, last time you did an expectation value of r in the ground state of hydrogen. And you also did the expectation value of r squared, as you recall. Okay. Those were, you know, fairly time-consuming calculations. But just imagine doing those calculations now for an arbitrary NLM state. Not too much harder. This one is actually more challenging to do these 1 over r's and 1 over r squareds that we're going to do here. But here's the answer. I won't draw this out anymore. So it's minus e squared over 4 pi epsilon 0. And then it's 1 over n squared times the Bohr radius, which we call a0. Okay, so that's the expectation value of the potential in an arbitrary state of the hydrogen atom labeled by NLM. Only n survives that calculation, n being the principal quantum number now. Okay, 1, 2, 3, and so on. And I will make a long story short and just say that v squared of r expectation value is a little bit more complicated. Actually, I don't think I have enough room for it here. So the expectation value of v squared of r clearly has the expectation value of 1 over r squared in it. And this gets a little bit more complicated. I'll just say that it's going to be e to the fourth over 16 pi squared epsilon 0 squared. And it's the following thing, which now depends on L. So it's 1 over L plus 1/2 n cubed a a bore squared in the denominator. Okay, so that's the result of somebody doing some very general calculation using that full-blown psi NLM wave function that we've written down a couple times, which has in it the spherical harmonics, the Laguerre polynomials, the exponentials, the power law stuff at small r, et cetera, et cetera. So that whole general wave function thrown into an expectation value of 1 over r squared yields these results. And obviously I'm not going to do that today, but it works. So let me just finish now by calculating, summarizing, putting all this stuff together. So we calculated expectation value of p to the fourth. That has to go into this expectation value of minus 1/8 p to the fourth over m cubed c squared, which is the first order correction to the energy due to the relativistic motion of the electron in the hydrogen atom. So I'll put all that stuff together, skip a lot of algebraic steps. And now I will write the first order correction to the energy now labeled by the two relevant quantum numbers, n and l. So I'm not using m because m doesn't come into play, the magnetic quantum number. And it's the following. It can be written as minus En0 quantity squared, so the unperturbed eigenenergy squared, divided by 2m c squared into this thing which you just saw over there. So it's 4n over l plus 1/2 minus 3. And it's not clear yet, but that actually does turn out to be negative. Let me do one more step and define an amazing number called the fine structure constant. Why is it called the fine structure constant? It's because what we're looking at now in this perturbation theory is we're looking at the fine structure of the spectral lines of hydrogen. And by the fine structure, we mean splittings on the order of 1 part in 10 to the 3 of the energy or the wavelength of these lines. Okay, that's called the fine structure of hydrogen. It's something you can't see with your bare eye. But I told you about a splitting of spectral lines in the Balmer series. There was one line that was split into 5 lines. That's part of the fine structure, F-I-N-E, fine structure of the hydrogen atom spectrum. Associated with that is a number. It's a nice dimensionless quantity, which can be formed from fundamental constants of nature. This is a cool thing. It's got Coulomb stuff in it, so it's got an E squared over 4 pi epsilon 0. That's going to be a potential times a length. In order to round it out, you have to multiply by an energy length in the denominator. So actually, it's an energy length. You divide by an energy length in the denominator, which is h bar c. Okay? So the charge of the electron, the permittivity of free space, Planck's constant, and the speed of light. It's a crazy combination of things. Okay? They're very, you know, wildly different aspects of physics kind of all combined. But this is a dimensionless number. And it has a value which is approximately 1/137.036. Okay, so it's a number less than 1. So it's a nice expansion parameter. It's used a lot in quantum electrodynamics as the expansion parameter. It's sort of like the lambda, if you might say. It's the kind of lambda quantity that we used for our perturbation expansion. Go ahead. It's hidden in here because the En0, as you might recall, has an E squared over 4 pi epsilon naught quantity squared. And it's also got the mass of the electron and other stuff. And this, well, here's the speed of light. There's the mass of the electron. Okay, so it's all hidden in this prefactor here. Okay, so let me just rewrite this thing in terms of the fine structure constant. It's minus En0 to the power 1 times alpha squared, as I recall. And then it's just multiplying all that same stuff. Actually, it's alpha squared over 2n squared. Then multiplying the same jazz. 4n over l plus 1/2 minus the quantity 3. Okay, and this kind of shows you very nicely the small nature of this perturbation. So again, this is the first order correction energy due to relativistic motion of the electron. It's first of all, the scale of the unperturbed eigenenergy, minus 13.6 divided by n squared. But it's multiplied by a really small number, alpha squared, which is on the order of 10 to the minus 5. okay, divided by 2n squared. Well, n only gets as small as 1. It gets bigger than that. So this thing is going to diminish as n gets bigger. Why do you suppose that is, physically? Right, but if you think about a Keplerian orbit, you think about a comet moving in its orbit around the sun. If the comet is really close to the sun, it's moving really fast. If it's way, way out, it's moving really slow. Okay, so this roughly tells you that it's the electrons that are really closely bound to the nucleus, the lower energy eigenstates, that of course are moving the fastest on, you know, in a classical sense. They would have the biggest correction to the from the relativistic effects. And then this is some details that obviously came out of those expectation value calculations. But it turns out this is overall a negative correction. So in fact, the hydrogen atom is slightly better or slightly more strongly bound than we expected, that we calculated in our unperturbed problem. It's a little bit better, but these are small corrections. So this is 10 to the minus 5 or so times 10 electron volts. So just to estimate this, so this is 10 eV, right, because EN0 is on the order of, say, 13 electron volts, multiplied by 10 to the minus 5 or so from this thing, roughly. And so we're talking about 10 to the minus 4 electron volts change. So on the order of a millivolt or less splitting of these lines, or this isn't really a splitting yet, but this is a lowering of the energy by just a little tiny bit. That's just the correction. It's the first order correction to the eigenenergy. So just to remind you, we're saying that the full eigenenergy, and now let me be a little bit more explicit, I want to write it in terms of the three quantum numbers of the hydrogen atom, N, L, and M, is the one we've calculated before, EN0, which is minus 13.6 electron volts over N squared, plus this thing. All right, and of course there's higher order corrections. If we were to go back and keep the next term in this series expansion here, we could then do another order of correction to this energy. But this is pretty good. We're already getting down to sort of a 1 part 10 to the 5 correction. We might expect the next one to be on the order of 1 part 10 to the 9 correction or so. Okay, so this is pretty good. It is necessary sometimes to go further, and you can do that. But like I said, also, it's possible to do a direct assault on the full relativistic problem of the hydrogen atom, which is it's called the Dirac equation, which gives you a more or less exact result for hydrogen. Okay. Any other questions? You've been a wonderful audience. I really enjoyed talking to you folks. I like it when you ask questions. This is good. You sure there's nothing else you want to ask? So now you're introduced to perturbation theory, to first order, second order. You're now fully prepared to solve all the homework problems that I gave you for Friday. We'll start the next part of the meeting going over the homework that's due Friday. I'll give you some clues about how to solve those problems. And then I'll give you two problems to work on, one of which is related to perturbation theory. Okay? Anything else? All right, then, let's meet at precisely 6 minutes after the hour. Thanks.